Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome from the Media Research Center, where we would never form a human chain at the entrance of an ABC or CBS or NBC News parking lot to block traffic against the problem of media bias. Did you see these so-called Extinction Rebellion nuts blocking the road in New York City? We can't imagine anyone on these liberal networks would utter a single discouraging word on air about this behavior, although they have to fear that it alienates voters. Our top story today is Lion Brian Williams, whose 11th-hour show in the late-night space on MSNBC is stuffed with liberal pomposity. This is why Greg Gutfeld eats him for breakfast on Fox. But wait, on a recent evening, Brywy told black leftist Baratunde Thurston that, gee, maybe the liberal media live in an urban bubble, alienated from the common people, the less sophisticated people, the dumber people.
I've always believed we should be more critical of ourselves. The press corps, the people we read and the people we see all day long on cable news, tend to live in blue dots. No fault of their own, it's where their employers are located. But it helps explain why the press corps largely was shocked at the rise of the Tea Party, shocked at the election of Donald Trump. Out beyond the last exit for a Whole Foods, people have been listening to Steve Bannon, and Trumpers have been running for town and city council and boards of ed. And this is happening in town after town across what is still a very red country.
It's a very red country in some parts of the country. And obviously those aren't the parts where there is a liberal news outlet. We've heard a version of this from Chuck Todd over the years. They'll acknowledge that maybe in Manhattan or Georgetown, they might not understand the way the liberal media sound to people in these tiny towns with Tea Party sentiment. Chuck Todd used to add that the secular media doesn't always understand the religious inspirations of people who just don't think like they do. But what makes this analysis slightly funny is they never actually adapt or change their approach. It's like they can identify the problem and then just continue to wallow in the problem. Brad Wilmot's article on this for Newsbusters notes that even inside this show, this particular night on Brian Williams, it was all the usual bubble bilge you hear on MSNBC. I had to laugh, like Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins, pa! When Baratunde Thurston responded to Brian Williams by saying, oh, the people are afraid. He means the white people. He said, people have been sold a path to power through grievance. Oh, sure, Baratunde. The left never organizes itself politically through a set of racial grievances or fears about racist cops. Why can't liberals ever acknowledge this? That fear is used as a political tactic by pretty much everyone in politics? They certainly can acknowledge that on MSNBC, they do it with words like climate crisis. The climate crisis is so bad, you get to block traffic and get away with it. Fear is a motivating thing in politics, and I think a lot of political consultants would say people believe negative ads, they don't believe the positive ads. And I think the same is true of news. People usually are more likely to believe negative news stories, and so we get a lot of negative news stories. At least Baratunde didn't go full Tiffany Cross. Did you see this wacko stuff on the weekend? Once again, she's mocking the Caucasians as the mayonnaise people who are somehow unqualified to nominate presidents. She's basically pushing this whole idea of she's sick of Iowa and New Hampshire coming first in the presidential pecking order.
Iowa and New Hampshire, two states whose populations are over 90% white. Now, that hardly reflects the American body politic of today, and it certainly does little to prepare for the rapidly changing demographics of America. Now, look, this is no diss to the folks of Iowa or New Hampshire, but fried butter sticks or mayonnaise face carvings should not determine who should be the next leader of the free world.
Mayonnaise face carvings? Come on, I grew up Iowa adjacent in western Wisconsin, and I don't recall anything about mayonnaise face carvings. We like mayonnaise, but hey, I know black people who like mayonnaise. I prefer Miracle Whip myself. That's where you get to tiny towns where they still eat that kind of strange stuff. And I suppose you grew up in Velveeta. Yes. So this whole idea, well, fried butter sticks, that's an actual thing. That does happen at like the Iowa State Fair. Fried, this is an American thing. That, I guess, is a tiny towns of America thing. We fry Oreos and Snickers and chicken. But it's, apparently, you don't do that once you get sophisticated. We'll have tuna tartare, thank you. But it's just weird to say people who like fried butter sticks can't nominate a president. Can you imagine if we said to Tiffany Cross on our show, like, people who eat collard greens shouldn't be able to nominate presidents? I mean, that just it underlines how stupid that line is. Now, I don't have a problem with them saying, hey, we're sick of Iowa and New Hampshire picking first. I'm all for that. But what's weird about the last cycle was Iowa and New Hampshire weren't determinative. You want South Carolina to go first? Well, South Carolina went for Biden. The black primary voters in South Carolina didn't go for Kamala Harris. They went for Biden. So that seems to me like, wasn't Joe Biden the mayonnaise face carvings Democrat in that contest? I don't have any problem with the whole idea of, yes, let's mix it up. It gets tiring. I don't see why Iowa and New Hampshire get to go first. Yeah, well, you know what they should do with primaries? They should just get out of like a big bingo card or thing or machine and roll it around, pull the balls out and say, this year the first primary goes to Idaho. And then they'll say, nope, too white. Nope. So, I mean, if the Democrats want to say all the states with large black populations get to go first. Well, yeah, this is my question. If they did that in 2020, would they get Biden all over again? But there's obviously this whole line in here that we can't let the white people run our politics. As long as we're talking about weekend hosts on MSNBC, then there's Jonathan Capehart. I was looking at his other weekend gig, the political panel on the PBS NewsHour. He does this on Friday nights with David Brooks. Washington Post columnist Jonathan Capehart on the left. New York Times columnist David Brooks on the slightly less left. Well, they were agreeing with each other on everything, like the Builds Back Better agenda of Biden. The PBS NewsHour actually advertised the segment with the words Builds Back Better. No quotes. That's my personal mini complaint right now, is they'll use Biden words like the American Rescue Plan and Build Back Better. No quotes. You know, do you think that they would say, and Trump's Making America Great Again plan, without putting any quotes or without choking and spitting? There was a mild disagreement on the Virginia gubernatorial election. David Brooks explicitly said the teachers in Virginia, at least in the suburbs here where they're fighting about it, they're going off to the left of where the parents are. And he sensed the political danger in this. The parents were going to get upset that they didn't like teaching all these exotic racial, systemic racism theories, gender theories, choose your own pronoun theories. Capehart, of course, had to disagree with this, and he just uttered a Terry McAuliffe style lie about this, that somehow CRT is taught nowhere.
What Glenn Youngkin is doing is, you know, talking about critical race theory. And let's be clear about something. Critical race theory is not taught in elementary schools, middle schools, or high schools anywhere in the United States. If it's taught at all, it is taught in law schools. So way far away from any parent's care.
Yeah, we've heard this a lot, this whole idea, oh, it's only taught in law schools. You know, anywhere you're teaching a kid that he should feel guilty because we've had 400 years of systemic racism, you can call it critical race theory. We could call it systemic racism education. That is what parents are objecting to. We're not afraid of saying, gee, we used to have slavery in this country. That was bad. We had Jim Crow in this country. That's bad. The problem is, you know that these teachers are also saying we have Jim Crow in America right now. And that is any attempt to change the Democrat regime on election integrity is Jim Crow 2.0. Here again, Jonathan Capehart was claiming only the other side of the fence motivates with fear. This is a conversation about race, and Youngkin's using race and fear as a way of trying to garner votes. Yeah, again, Al Sharpton's whole career is using race and fear. A lot of black politicians, their whole career is using race and fear. Ilhan Omar is using race and fear. That's what they do. That's how they use it. The entire Congressional Black Caucus, pretty much, is using race and fear as a way to garner votes. Maxine Waters, are you going to try to tell me she doesn't use the politics of fear? And then we're still on the weekend. Alicia Menendez, daughter of Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey, also spread this lie that CRT isn't taught in Virginia. Now, how do you know a thing like that? How do you prove that? You know, PolitiFact actually gave Glenn Youngkin a red flag of falsehood for saying they teach CRT in all the schools. But apparently you can say they teach CRT in none of the schools, and the fact checkers are fine with that. How do you prove that there isn't a single school anywhere in the state of Virginia that doesn't teach this? It's not like you've got a camera recording the lectures in every room. You know, when they tried to do that, like with Accuracy in Academia, the conservatives would start recording the lectures to show how kooky the lectures were. That was like a violation of academic freedom. These people aren't recording lessons. You can go to libs of TikTok and see the educators and what they're really teaching, what they're advocating teaching. They are teaching in some schools some version of systemic racism education or critical race theory. That is happening right now in the state of Virginia, and that can't be disproven and should just be assumed. But obviously, Alicia Menendez's line on here was all right-wing stoking flames, right-wing media bending the truth, radicalizing the far right. And they turn this into how the Loudoun County attorney is now receiving death threats. So what MSNBC is doing here is shifting the victim lens from the alleged rape victim. Yeah. What? No, don't pay any attention to that girl over there who's been raped. And somehow making it about poor liberal prosecutor. Now, death threats are evil. Nobody should make them. I don't want them on my phone. I wouldn't put them on anybody else's phone. But the liberal media are very selective in reporting this idea of death threats. And this is one area where I'm going to guess they don't exactly ask for a recording or an email to prove it. And sometimes they might actually play a recording. But in a lot of these cases, they're just going to assume it. It would be rude to ask them for proof. Then they connect the dots. As long as we're not proving anything, Menendez is like, Glenn Youngkin, the Republican running for governor, called you out at a campaign rally, embracing the narrative that led to the threats against you. So if you suggest, I don't want CRT taught in Virginia, I think we need to investigate this rape in Loudoun County, you're basically encouraging death threats against the county attorney. Isn't that, I mean, look at all the crazy conspiracy theories that are going on here. All the energetic spin and smear. You can tell this is the last weeks of an election because MSNBC is just out and out going for it. We have noticed the networks aren't really covering this. Did you hear this development? The National School Boards Association, which wrote a nasty letter to the Department of Justice, suggesting that the threat level from parents was so bad it could be compared to domestic terrorism. They actually apologized over the weekend. They sent a letter out to their members saying, on behalf of SBA, we regret and apologize for the letter. They said there was no justification for some of the language included in the letter. Scott Whitlock wrote up, all three networks from Friday through Monday morning ignored this organizational retreat. Obviously, the DC office got a little hot, and people out there in the States weren't crazy about this idea, because now they have a bunch of angry parents coming to school board meetings asking them, oh, do you think I'm a domestic terrorist for coming here and having a complaint? They're all taking that in the ear now, and they've called up the national office in Washington. If you don't understand, the National School Boards Association is a nest of Democrats. The people who have wrote this letter are a bunch of Democrats. You can look, go into Open Secrets under the advanced search, put in National School Boards Association, you're going to find donations to a pile of Democrats. But as usual, the liberals media will present this as school boards. They won't present it as the latest Democrat lobby making Democrat points. And fact checkers didn't check this smear. You know, the Washington Post gave four Pinocchios to Republicans like Jim Jordan for saying that the Department of Justice would spy on schools. You can't use the word spy. Four Pinocchios. But these people can write a letter and say parents are domestic terrorists. There was no fact check. And they certainly didn't find it to be true. And they didn't find it to be four Pinocchios. This is one of those things that proves that these so-called independent fact checkers aren't the slightest bit independent, because they allow all sorts of rhetorical excess from the left. It goes unchecked. But you use little words like, Garland wants the FBI to spy on school board meetings. Well, if the FBI shows up at a Black Panther meeting to attend it, do we think the left-wingers would call that spying? I think they would. Finally, Nick Fondacaro was on several hot stories on Sunday. The Washington Post had a story by Ashley Parker and Carissa Wolf. Carissa, I guess, is based in Idaho. They bemoaned how across these United States, President Biden's critics hurl increasingly vulgar taunts. Now, I always wonder, what is your metric? What is your methodology for measuring all this? They had this sentence in there. The current eruption of anti-Biden signs and chants is on another level, far more vulgar and widespread than under Trump? Really? This came after the paper spent 4 years actively promoting F Trump comments. These people even took issue with the Let's Go Brandon chant as somehow a really objectionable thing. Well, you know what they mean when they have fun with that phrase. But this is what I love. Nick did this. He just did a search. Let's put the terms F-bomb, the real word, and Trump. It gets you a list of articles that exposed the prevailing feeling at the newspaper toward the former president. They were enjoying all of this. Headlines like, former Mexican president says he will not pay for Donald Trump's effing wall. I bet that one clicked on Twitter. Or, she put an obscene anti-Trump message on her truck and was arrested. Now she might sue. And then, from the world of hip-hop, JG's political message is as blunt as he can be. This was basically promotional. YG had a song titled FDT, in which, spell the words out and say them, he said FDT over and over, and they threw the N-word in because he's a rapper. This was all right with the Washington Post. Now, others on Twitter and whatever pointed out, how about the lady bicyclist who flipped the bird at Trump's motorcade in 2017? She is now on the board of supervisors in Loudoun County. She can now be on the county board, avoiding all the rape stuff. The headline from Petula Dvorak was, Julie Brisman's fabulous revenge run, and the people getting elected to get even. Oh yes, the fabulous revenge run. That's what happens when you flip off the president. Well, that president's different. I'm not a fan of this trend. I get enjoying the unpopularity of the FJB breaking out at college football games. And you can say, oh, look, this is fun because it's an indicator of where public opinion is going. But, you know, I'm a fuddy-duddy. I would feel bad flipping birds or saying F-words at a college game where people brought their kids. You know, some guy gave me a gesture out the window the other day of his car that needed a sign language interpreter. I don't know what he meant. I usually, anytime I get criticized while I'm driving, I'm like, yeah, I probably deserved it. But I'd like a world to be just, I like a little bit more civil myself. I mean, we can call out the liberals that in ways that don't bring out the entire fusillade of F-words. Maybe that's just me. Finally, Fonda Caro gets to Brian Stelter on Reliably Liberal, Reliable Sources. Well, Jackie Combs is a columnist now for the LA Times, and back on October 15, she wrote a nasty column on how both-siderism is ruining journalism. It's actually amazing. Stelter didn't have her on the show last week. I guess they just didn't have time or space. But this was basically Jackie making the Arianna Huffington note. She wrote a book called We Are Right and They Are Wrong. And it was just this whole idea of, you don't give equal time to the wrong side. Yes, the conservatives are always wrong. So then, therefore, your story should be 100% loaded with liberals because they're 100% correct. And that's not ideological at all. Brian Stelter, usual enthusiastic puppy for censorship arguments.
I want to dive right into your argument about what both-siderism is and why it's failing the public. Who's is it that we're treating Democrats and Republicans equally and ignoring GOP radicalism? Is that the heart of the problem?
In a sense, I mean, there's no question that journalists are recognizing the radicalization of the Republican Party. I think what's changed a little bit is that since Trump left office, there's more of a sense that maybe we're back to normal.
Oh, yes. Jackie Combs thinks the world started to go awry in 1995 when Newt Gingrich and the GOP took over the House. Well, look, these people expected Republicans to always play get along, go along. Smile more, take the crumbs the liberals give you, talk politely like the Bushes. Never get in fights. You know, this was sort of the line about Bob Michael when Speaker O'Neill, Tip O'Neill was Speaker, you know. Bob Michael was over there in the corner going, nice to see you, Tip. Let's go have a beer when this is all over. They loved that idea because at that time, the Democrats had ruled the House for 40 or 45 years. That was the way that the Jackie Combses of the world liked it. Somehow, journalism went into rapid decline when Newt Gingrich became Speaker of the House. Because Newt Gingrich wasn't going to be like Bob Michael. Newt Gingrich was going to get in fights with reporters. He might just rudely suggest they are Democrat hacks. He was willing to assume that liberals didn't always have the best interests of America at heart. He wasn't willing to accept the idea that they were always right on racial justice or economic justice or any of the things that they're so cocky that they're on the right side of history. But what this all comes down to is, yes, Jackie Combs' column basically said, whenever you start talking about both parties, I stop listening or reading. That's intolerance. That's our liberal media today. Jackie Combs is an older person, like me. She's older than me. But, you know, this is the same mentality that the millennials and the Gen Zers have, which is, The other side needs to be squashed. They need to be crushed. They need to be censored. Nobody needs to listen to them. Everything that comes out of their mouth is basically misinformation. Now, some of this you can blame on Trump. Some of this you can blame on Stop the Steal. You can blame it on the whole idea that, well, it doesn't matter with how much we lie, because everybody who loves me will believe everything I say. That's not a way to run politics, and I can see where journalists would be upset about that. But conservatives and Republicans have a lot of arguments. Glenn Youngkin has a lot of points to make about what's going wrong in the schools. And what the liberals want to basically say is, we're just going to endlessly tie you to Trump, and we're not going to listen to anything you say. Everything that you say that would make sense to a set of parents, we're going to go over to the set of parents and basically tell them that Glenn Youngkin wants to call in death threats. I don't know if this argument's working for Terry McAuliffe, but this kind of argument shouldn't be used by people who think that somehow they're fair and balanced. I mean, Jackie Combs actually said to Brian Stelter, oh, I was a fair and balanced reporter. No, you were not. We can go back to the 90s. We can go back to before Newt Gingrich coming on the scene, and we're going to see you were a Democrat hack. You were a Democrat hack under Gingrich. You were a Democrat hack with Obama. You really thought, this is classic. Jackie Combs said on a panel in 2010 that, you know, this was a time of crisis when Obama came in, and the Republicans really needed to knuckle under and give him Obamacare. Because civility. Democrat reporters really expect surrender. That's what they call civility. You need to concede and bow down to our point of view. Well, we're not going to do that. Conservatives are going to speak up, we're going to fight back, and we're going to expose these people because they're not fair, they're not balanced, they're not objective, and they're not fact-based. She claimed she was also fact-based. As if the conservatives don't have any facts that you could acknowledge or you're refusing to acknowledge that conservatives have any facts. Oh, those are alternative facts. Well, here's the alternative fact you're going to have to consider. Republicans are going to win some seats, and then you're going to have to deal with it. But this is why we're here at Newsbusters, to call out reporters saying that conservatives should be shut down and be told to shut up. We're not doing it. Come here and listen up and read up once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for checking in.